When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Best Western, we can't promise you the perfect weekend hiking trip or the perfect sunset. We cannot promise you'll make a new friend on the trail. It's certainly possible. We just can't guarantee it. And you probably shouldn't force it. But we can promise you this. With over 4,200 hotels worldwide, you can find a warm welcome and a comfortable room right on the way to where you're going. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menas, and it is the wrap of day four from the World Test Championship final. I'm joined by Paul Dennett. Paul, we'll get into the details of the day, but a day mired in controversy with a disputed catch by Cameron Green of Shubman Gill.
G'day, Menas. Yes, a disappointing. I know you love these sorts of controversial moments. I absolutely abhor them, and this has been one of the most disappointing things that's happened in Australia-India Test cricket for some time. It's sort of straight back to the bad old days of when the two nations couldn't seem to play sport against each other without so much rancour. And I think that it's been really disappointing, the outcry as a result of this catch.
Yeah, so many disappointing elements to it. And as the match stands going into the final day, India need 280 runs to win with 7 wickets in hand. King Kohli not out, looking good, but getting back to that catch, Paul, so many disappointing elements to me, and none of which has anything to do with Cameron Green or the umpire's performance. And they all surround the reaction of the Indian team and the Indian fans. And Indian fans might not like this, but in the end, Shubman Gill shook his head out in the middle there and had a big sook and made it very clear for the whole world he thought it wasn't a catch, which can happen in the heat of the moment. I totally give players a little bit of leeway. You know, you're playing for your country. It's passionate. But then after play, he's gone on Twitter and got a screenshot of Green catching the ball and has put two magnifying glass and the hand over his face emoji to further inflame the situation, to further inflame the Indian fans who were already yelling from the sidelines that Cameron Green was a cheat at the Oval. I mean, this is a poor performance by Gill and a poor performance by the Indian team.
I agree that that's not something that Gill should have tweeted, and he should face repercussions for it. Surely that comes under some level of refusing to accept the umpire's decision or dissent. It's going to be another interesting test case for the power of the International Cricket Council versus the power of the BCCI. So I'll be very interested to see what happens there. One point I also want to make to begin with, the notion of the clean catch has been one that, you know how I love the laws and love the kind of finer points of them. This is one area I've never really liked because I've always found it frustrating, but I reluctantly dived into the laws today. And I'll tell you who's got to cop some of the blame. Reluctantly on this one, because I like to be clean cut, and I knew that this was not going to be clean cut. But I'll tell you who's got to take some acceptance for the blame on this is the bloody MCC. The law is written appallingly. I had expected that there'd be clause after clause. I expected that, you know, 7.6.7.3 clause B, and I'd be sitting there trying to work out, and oh God, I wish I'd done a law degree so I could understand this. Instead, it's like it got written in 5 minutes. It's the briefest bloody law you'd ever want to see. And it basically just says that it's a fair catch if it's caught before it touches the ground, if fair enough. And then it goes on to sort of say, and then as described in 33.2, if it's caught before it touches the ground. And 33.2, a catch will be fair if the ball is held in the hand or hands of a fielder, even if the hand holding the ball is touching the ground. Now, I understand, I was listening to our friends Lemon and Collins on their final word today, and I understand that the notion is that the prevailing acceptance of those conditions is that as long as you take the catch without the ground helping you take the catch in any way, but if you take the catch with your ball, with your hand holding the ball, brushing the ground, and that the grass incidentally touches the ball but in no way helped you take the catch, then that is fine. And that is the interpretation that exists and kind of has always existed, which makes sense. We'll put it in the laws. You know, Indian fans, I have some sympathy for them. The fans who, without resorting to, you know, abuse of Cameron Green, who are simply showing a picture of that picture, the same picture that Gill showed, where it appeared as though the ball is kind of potentially touching the grass at that point. There should be a clause in the law that someone could reply with and say, no, look at the replay in full, and you will see that it was a clean catch, and any part of the ball that might have touched the grass was with the same time as his hand touching the ground. That is okay. And if you want to rule those sorts of catches out, then it's going to change. You're not going to have any of these great catches anymore. Then I think that would make more sense. But the fact that they're written so loosely, how are you in charge of the game, Maryland Cricket Club? You've been in charge of the game forever. Do a better job.
It's a very good point. And with the fans, I mean, this is why I'm annoyed about Gill, because he's a professional cricketer. So he knows that the difference is, as you were saying, the ball can touch the grass with your fingers under. The problem is where you scoop the ball off the grass, and that's when it's not a clean catch. So, Gill should know that. I understand fans who may not have ever taken a slips catch or know the intricacies of catching, but to me, it's a clear dismissal. The fact that this is blown up to where it is, I think, is poor. And I will say, I think if Green had taken that catch for the Mumbai Indians in the IPL, they wouldn't be saying the same thing. So that's my opinion.
Well, I think that the thing about it that's so poor is, look, when I watched it on the third umpire was scrutinising it, I was actually listening to the BBC at the same time, which was 30 seconds delayed relative to the TV. So I was doing my head in, and I was watching on a dodgy hotel television, not in HD, at a poor angle, et cetera, et cetera. I looked at that and I thought, I think this is going to be given out, and I think I'm comfortable with that. But I also thought, if it's given not out, then I can accept that as well. It is a very line ball situation. So I don't have any problem with the Indian fans who think that it should have been out according to the way that they read the laws. As I said, I think the laws, if they're going to enforce a kind of an interpretation of the laws that is not absolutely implicitly plain within the laws, then rewrite the laws and make them better. So I got no problems with the Indian fans who are saying, "Oh, I think that's out." You know, I'd happily debate them, but I've got no problems with it. The problem I've got, as you say, the players who are inciting it further, but especially the criticism of Green and the criticism of Kettlebrook. You know, you can say you disagree with Kettlebrook's decision, but to imply that he's somehow cheating is just insane. And the booing of Cameron Green by the crowd, that is very, very poor. And they, I don't think they're true cricket fans, anyone who booed Cameron Green, especially those who are kind of booing him as he's walking off the ground.
Yep, 100% agree, and I hope we smash India on this fifth day now. But I tweeted out that I thought Shubman Gill should be banned for 3 tests from that tweet that he put out after play, and former Test cricketer Marcus North retweeted it. And it's just poor performance. It's a real test now to see how strong the ICC, when standing up against the CCI, they are. And I would say overall, the ICC have not done a good job with this test match for what should be a showpiece event. They've delivered a poor, dangerous pitch. The over rates have been slow. Now we've got the fourth day mired in controversy. There's been no definitive action from them. And as usual, the ICC sometimes don't show the sort of leadership the cricket needs.
Yeah. And I want to reiterate as well that if that catch had been given not out, I would have thought, oh, that's a bit unlucky. But I've seen them that way. I probably fall just over the line of thinking it could be out. I respect those who think it's not out. What I don't respect is, as I said, the
cheating allegations.
Yeah, and then the nastiness and the inability to understand that sometimes in sport you're going to get a call that's a 55-45 call go against you that you might have thought was 55-45 the other way. It doesn't mean that the third umpire is a cheat. It doesn't mean that Cameron Green is a cheat. It doesn't mean that a player should then be empowered to tweet out after the game. What would Richard Kettlebrand's family think of that? That, you know, the Shubman Gill has tweeted that out to massive, massive retweets. Kettlebrand, who's regarded as possibly the best umpire of all time, or certainly right up there, who, with the full knowledge of the laws and the playing conditions, has made that decision, and it's a 50-50 call. That's another thing that, as much as people were celebrating the removal of the soft signal, it did have the impact of reducing this sort of problem. That when there was the soft signal, this is what would have happened. The umpire on the field would have given that out. The third umpire would have said, I don't have conclusive reason to overturn it. And the Indian fans would have got angry at the soft signal rather than, you know, it took a little bit of that out of it. And the soft signal was not perfect at all. And I understand when boundary catches were caught and you've got an umpire guessing. And I understand it's also kind of off what I normally say, where I'm saying just let the technology decide everything. But in the instance of the soft signal in this sort of thing, this is why it was brought in, to remove this sort of thing from occurring.
Agree. Well, a very unedifying moment. And really, we should be talking about what an exciting prospect this fifth day looks like, because that innings from Kohli heading up to stumps, 44 not out of 60 balls, has livened up the game when India looked to be falling out of it. And he looks in as good a form as I've seen him. So we should be talking about that and not, you know, Gill tweeting out that he's feeling upset that he got given out. But I guess to go back to the start of play, Paul, because, you know, an intriguing morning, a few talking points out of the Australian camp for me. Manus Labuschagne was out early for 41. But then I thought after his dismissal, not enough intent was shown by Cameron Green with the bat. He ended up making 25 off 95. He sort of slowed things down. Alex Carey was quite industrious. He ended up 66 not out. But I thought Australia lacked a little bit of direction in that first session.
I thought they were poor in the first session. And I think that Green, on the fourth day, he scored 18 off 87. And I just think that that's ridiculous. And I've criticised him before when he plays it that way in test level, that not only is it not, it's not a question of it not being entertaining. I'm not worried about that. I think it's pragmatically the wrong way for him to play. He would have scored more runs more likely if he had played more aggressively. I mean, the shot that he got out on, not offering a shot, trying to sort of pat it away and it then, you know, ricocheting back and hitting his stumps. I hope he looks at that and thinks, a player of my ability, I shouldn't be getting out playing that. You know, that was disappointing. And I think that they would have had this feeling of, if we don't take it very, very cautiously this morning, we could get rolled up quite quickly and suddenly present India with it would still have been a difficult chase of, let's say, 350, but it would have been a somewhat achievable chase. And in a bid to avert that from happening, what they did was they failed to score quickly enough such that when they ultimately declared, they set India 444 off a nominal 137 overs at a run rate of 3.2. Now, with the slow over rates that have been occurring in this test match, they were never probably going to get all of those overs. But 3.2, or if you add a little bit to it because of the slower over rates, is not a scoring rate that presents too many problems for modern day players. The way that Stark and Carey were finding the pitch quite easy in their innings, somehow the pitch has flattened out a little bit, which is remarkable given how difficult it was and completely against what my expectations had been, that they must have, you know, surely the thought must have crossed their mind. If we declare now, because we need all this time to get them out, in that last hour, we're not going to be saying, oh, thank God we've got this extra hour to bowl them out. We're going to be saying, oh my God, they're going to win this. And as things stand, on the final day, India now need 280 off 90 overs at 3.1. Incidentally, if no overs had been lost at all, given the 38 overs that we've lost in the test match, they would need 280 off 128 at 2.2, which, you know, a completely separate story. But India are unlikely, but certainly possibly going about this the way that they could actually get a win out of this.
Yes, and some concerning stuff from the Australian camp for me. And people think I've got this anti-Cummins agenda, and it's certainly not an agenda. It's just sort of looking at the evidence before me. But Alex Carey said after play that there was no talk of a declaration from the Australian camp until Pat Cummins came out to the crease in the middle of that second session. And I just think that's ridiculous. I think you've got to be going out there on that fourth morning with a plan of how we're going to further this game, how we're going to push for a result. There's a world championship on the line. And I hate to do this, but I just don't think Ben Stokes would have let a game drift like that. He'd have told his team, go out there and absolutely, you know, monster the ball, score 150 in that first session, and we'll declare and leave ourselves a lot of time. And I think this sort of rudderless leadership is an issue going into the Ashes. And I just wonder how good this team would be with a good tactical skipper.
I tend to agree with not maybe the generalisation at the end, but I agree with most of the rest of what you said. I think it is strange that they should have taken Green aside before play and said, listen, the smartest way for you to play today is to not play like it's a T20, but have aggression in mind and play closer to T20 cricket than Test cricket. And I understand the whole idea of empowering players to play the way that they see fit. But I remember in Bradman's autobiography, there was one game, I think it was in 48, when the game was in the balance, maybe in a low chase, and they were starting to get a bit defensive. And Bradman said, I sensed that now is the moment. I sent out the message to the players, attack, and they did, and they ended up winning the game. And I think that Cummins should have, made that point. The reason I'm saying I don't think about how Australia would go with a tactically astute captain is that if the implication is that Smith, I don't think that he is any more tactically astute than Cummins. And I don't think that there have been all that many, especially tactically astute captains that Australia has had. I think Ian Chappell and Michael Clarke have been the sort of two exceptions.
I don't know if I'm not going to get into an argument about Smith's captaincy right at the moment. But yes, look, the issue was that Green just went into his shell, and he would have been much better off getting caught on the boundary or, you know, get bowled trying to hit it out of the park than that sort of meek dismissal. But positive for Australia, Alex Carey, fine test match, 48 in the first innings, 66 not out in the second innings. Mitchell Starc's 41 off 57 was lent him good support. But, you know, really fine stuff from Alex Carey. I love seeing him do well for Australia. He is a great guy. Like, you know, there's, you know, people talk about his leadership abilities, but I've seen it up close. It's no hyperbole with him. He's a great team man. So I love seeing him do well. And he's had a very good test.
Yeah, he batted really well, as did Mitchell Starc. And I've criticized Stark's selection in this match for his for his bowling. And I still maintain that Australia would have been better off picking Michael Nisa. But that was certainly a very impressive innings in the second innings. And when he plays that way, yeah, he's a very valuable, almost an all-rounder.
Yep. So Cummins was the last player out. He was out for 5. Australia declared at 8 for 270.
I wouldn't have declared even then. I think even at that moment then, I think it would have been worth sending Nathan Lyon out with the instructions of have a bit of a swipe. And even Boland, even if they could have swiped another, let's say, 25 runs off 4 overs, then that just puts the calculus, even making it even more difficult for India to win. And the whole notion of, oh, well, if they bat that way and score the runs, they deserve it. It's going to be pretty cold comfort if Australia, having dominated this game for so long, end up losing it and look back and think maybe we didn't need to declare so early.
Don't you think, though, setting India a target of 444 when the highest fourth innings run chase at the Oval is, what, 280 back in 1902, is that Jessop's match that we talk about with Norcross? I mean, I think, you know, if you've got 400 plus, back yourself.
I'm not saying don't back yourself. My overarching thing was they should have scored more quickly earlier so that they could have declared with this amount of time left in the game and with more runs there. But no, I think you've got to be pragmatic. You don't look at history and all those other sorts of things. You've got to look at it and say, hey, Starc and Carey were making this pitch look pretty easy. India has a lineup full of very, very fine players. Crucially, it's not like it's a defensive move batting any longer, because if we declare right now and we say that we're worried that they are going to bat the entire length of the time and save the game, if we need that extra time in the last hour, as I said, it's probably to stop them from winning the game. So I think you've got to be hard-nosed, pragmatic, and say, don't give them an even break. It's not about being timid. It's about saying there's not much chance of us missing out on a win by batting a few extra overs here, but there is a chance of us ensuring that our chances of losing drops even further. That's what I would have said.
Wow. Wow. Not the conservative answer I expected. All right. So,
no, but you know, I mean, don't hand it to them. It's not handing it to them on a plate. But it'll be cold comfort at the end of it all to say, well, we had to be beaten by a record-breaking innings to have beaten us. I've said before on the show that just over 400 being the sort of nominal top amount that you can score to win a test match in the final innings is a record that is crying out to be broken. The highest fourth innings total in test cricket is 650 or something when England and South Africa had to have the game called off in 1939 because England had to catch the boat home. England were four wickets in hand needing 20 runs or something like that. You know, had that boat been due the next day, the highest runs chased in history would be 670, and we'd be all talking about it in a different way.
Yes, and had the world not been on the verge of the World War II, then we might have. All right, so best of the bowling for India, Ravindra Jadeja, 3 for 58. So then India come out needing 444 for the victory and to win the World Test Championship, and they got off to a blazing start. They were none for 41 after seven overs, motoring along. Gill was 18 off 19 when the controversial moment happened that Green took the catch off Boland. So Boland
good
got
catch,
the
by the way.
Yeah, very good catch. Great catch.
Yeah.
No doubt
yeah,
about it.
That's what we should be talking about. Instead of the controversy, it should be like, you know, that was an absolutely unbelievable catch. And as much as I criticised the way he batted, that's potentially a match-winning catch. Hopefully it is.
It was terrific. And then a nice 50-run partnership between Pujara and Rohit Sharma, who played a lovely innings. Sharma, 43 off 60. He was dominating the attack and then played what I would call a pretty loose shot from line, swinging across the line, hit plumb in front. He did refer it, but it was going on to hit the stumps. Line got the second wicket. But, yeah, I thought that was a pretty casual dismissal from Sharma.
Well, it's the first wicket for Lyon in the second innings, and I'm really hoping that this time tomorrow we can be recording a show where you can mock my prior to the match sort of calling into question Nathan Lyon's position. Hopefully, he can take Pfeiffer and bowl Australia to victory, and I'll be very happy to acknowledge what a great performance that will be.
Yeah, definitely. And then just going through the dismissals, the final dismissal, and another and uncharacteristic dismissal, and this is where I thought Australia might actually, after this dismissal, I thought Australia might actually go through India and have them in a perilous position at stumps, but that didn't happen. Pujara, who is a lovely orthodox test player, just decided to ramp Cummins, and all he did was just feather it to Alex Carey off the face of the bat, and he was out for 27. At that stage, India were 3 for 93 and in real trouble.
Yeah, I don't want to criticize the shot because I, looking at the county performances of Pujara, he has scored much more quickly than I can ever remember him doing so. And I think if he has taken the approach of a little bit more aggression is the right way to go, I think that's right. I think he was a bit too, I'm not going to say he was too slow. He won India the series in Australia the first time they ever won, and he played brilliantly. But I think as he's getting towards the end of his career, a few more shots have been called for. So it didn't look great, but I'm not going to criticise the intent.
And looking at and then we had a lovely partnership between Kohli and Rahane. So Kohli's not out 44 off 60. Rahane 20 off 59 deliveries. They got the score from 3 for 93 up to 3 for 164. They did that in just under 20 overs. So they scored pretty quickly and just a lovely passage of play hitting at the stumps. Kohli looked in just such great form.
Yes, and I was battling at this point. I was watching it. I don't know how much of it was coming into my head because it's been a long few nights. But I think that the one thing I'll say is that this Test Championship, for most of it, has been highly watchable. And even if it was going to look like, at the point when Pujara got out, if Australia then did run through India and win by a substantial margin, you might look back on it in years to come and say, oh, this match was never that close. But it's been pulsating for fair bits of it. And even if it ended up being not that close a result, I still think it's been a worthy climax to the test cycle. But if India can take it deep tomorrow, and look, I hope they don't win, but I didn't want England to win the Ashes in 2005. I was devastated when they beat us. But looking back, it was the best thing to have happened to kind of the Ashes rivalry. Maybe if India win this, we'll all look back in years to come and say this was the best thing to happen to Test cricket. That the same way that when India won the 83 World Cup, they really took 50 over cricket more seriously. them winning the 07 inaugural World T20 really propelled T20 along. Maybe winning this game, especially with this controversy that is very regrettable in my opinion, but certainly it's getting everyone talking about it. I said to my wife before the podcast, oh, I'm going to talk about this. And she said, oh, you're going to talk about that that catch, whether it carried or not. I said, oh, God, you know, everyone's talking about it. And she said, yeah, I've seen the photo. It looks like it hit the ground.
Oh, no.
Then she realized she was just stirring me. It might end up being the best thing that could happen for Test cricket. And, you know, so hopefully Australia win. But if they do lose, I will use that as my consolation.
Yeah, Twitter's getting pretty ugly. I'll read one tweet out that's replied to me calling for a Gill ban, praying for a career-ending injury to Green and you as well. Well, Snowflake, I have actually long since retired from cricket. So anyway, I hope Australia wins before lunch on the fifth day. So, but it's beautifully set up. And if we do see a Kohli masterclass on the fifth day, whether India win or not, if they just make a good shake of it, I think it will be quite a spectacle. Just looking at the Aussie bowling, I mean, I thought Cummins, 9 overs, 1 for 42. He wasn't his, I would say, usual kind of accurate self. He looks a bit undercooked for Test cricket. And Mitchell Starc, 7 overs, none for 45. Economy rate of 6.4. Just hasn't found any sort of rhythm yet.
No, I think that our intended beginning tomorrow needs to be very, very accurate. I think that Boland should open up, potentially even with Green. And then get Lyon on pretty quickly and keep it tight, not give away easy singles, and really try to strangle them. But I have great sympathy with how Richard Kettleborough must be feeling. How's he going to be if he gets another contested catch, knowing that the scrutiny that he's under? And I, again, circle back to what I said at the start. I really do think that the lawmakers should hang their heads in shame that the law is not protecting him more. That if it is going to the point where it's an interpretation that everyone kind of who's studied this in detail knows that that's the way it's going to be interpreted, but it's not actually been written into the laws in that way. That's just opening things up for controversy, and people all around the world are going to look at that one photo and tee off on him. He does not deserve that, and they should say, right, we have to rewrite the laws such that this can never happen in this way again.
Agree. You're spot on with that. I mean, that's a very practical thing that needs to happen. And hopefully when the MCC Rules Committee gets together, it's usually every summer in England.
Well, it should be today. It should be today. They should change it overnight for the fifth day. Like, don't wait till summer and get... And why is it full of ex-players? Get some actual bloody legal minds on there who know what they're talking about rather than ex-players. Get someone who's drafted the constitution of a country or someone or something and get them in there to do a proper job and not make such a wishy-washy law.
Indeed. All right, well, let's just wrap up our discussion around day four. As I said, India need 280 going into the fifth day, all set up for an incredible finish. And just closing words I'd like to say to the Indian fans that may be a little irate listening to this, that I love the passion that all cricket fans show for the game, Indians especially, but I would caution you against calling players cheats and reacting to something that is clearly not blatant cheating. Whatever you can say about it, you know, if you disagree with the decision, that's one thing. But to accuse this Australian team of being cheats, one thing I will not criticise Pat Cummins for is his leadership off the field. He's turned this team around. They are a very likeable team, and Cameron Green is exceptionally likeable. So back off. That's all I'm saying.
Well, every player in the world would have done what he did. Dive. Well, they wouldn't have, because they wouldn't have caught it, because they're not as good as him. But if they had dived, taken the catch like that, it would have felt very clean. And then you stand there and you take the scrutiny of the third umpire. He has done nothing that any other player in the world would have done differently. He's done nothing wrong at all. And it is, yeah, very disappointing that the way that he is being treated and the way that Kettleborough is being treated.
All right, so on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening to our podcast. Remember to rate and review the show. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app. If you want to come to our live show in Sydney, the links are in the show notes. And we'll be back at the end of the fifth day to talk about the result in this World Test Championship final.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.